Hello and welcome to the Torah Imecha Nachyomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Aviva Orlian, and today we will be studying Perek Yudalad, the 14th chapter. We just finished learning of Avshalom's ordering his servants to kill Amnon in order to avenge Amnon's molestation of their sister Tamar. It seems that what really incensed Avshalom was the fact that David did not seem to outrightly censure Amnon for this act. Avshalom, after killing Amnon, fled to his grandfather in Geshur. Remember, his mother was Macha, who was a Yefas Toar, who was taken by David and converted to Judaism. So her father, the king of Geshur, was the place where Avshalom fled. Yoav understands David's conflicting emotions and that he misses Avshalom, and therefore he devises a plan to bring Avshalom back. It seems that, according to the Barbanel, it seems that some of the brothers wanted to avenge Amnon's death by putting to death Avshalom, and David did not make any overtures to bring Avshalom back, and therefore Avshalom does not feel safe, and he cannot venture back to Yerushalayim. Yoav understands that David is pining away for Avshalom, whether or not he really misses him and wants to bring him back, or whether or not he misses the Avshalom that could have been, according to the Kli Yakar, that he went so far astray. He is also concerned, says the Kli Yakar, that he has been with non-Jews of a very different code, with a very different code of ethics, because he had been with his grandfather in Geshur. But either way, Yoav realizes that David misses his son terribly, and therefore enlists the help of a woman from Tekoa, the city where people are known to be very wise. And he enlists this help of this woman to implement a plan to bring bring Avshalom back. And what he does is he tells this woman to present a fictitious case before David as a way of having David change his stance and allow Avshalom to return. We have seen a similar method employed by Nathan Hanavi when he presented the story of the lamb and the rich and the poor man after David had erred with Bathsheba. Just as a little bit of an aside, because we've spoken about Yoav so many times, Yoav was a very complex personality, was not very black and white if he was a Rasha, a Tzaddik. The fact that David kept him as his right-hand man should speak volumes. He did make mistakes, however, the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us that he is known to be a very giving person. He was a very charitable person. His home was open. The Psikta Rabba tells us that he was a Chacham Yoshev Rosh Shel Sanhedrin, a Gadol B'Torah V'Gibor B'Melchama. So this was a very complex personality. So getting back to our storyline, Yoav instructs this woman to dress in clothing of mourning, and he instructs her not to put any oil on her, and present yourself as a woman who is in mourning. And incidentally, Moed Katan tells us, Mikan la'avel she'asur b'tachboset, the fact that she has to put on, he's telling her to put on clothing of mourning, and he's also telling her, don't put on any oils on you. Moed Katan also says, Mikan la'avel she'asur b'rechitza. From here, Chazal learn out that a mourner cannot wear freshly laundered clothing and cannot bathe or put any oils on them during a time of mourning. So Yoav instructs her to pose as a mourner and gives her an outline of the script of what she should say. Now, clearly it wasn't an exact script. She would have to ad-lib depending on how the conversation went, which is why it had to be a very smart woman so that she would think on her toes and be quick. So she comes before the king and plays the part of this woman in mourning who is in a terrible, terrible predicament. And she dramatically falls on her face before David. Pasuk Dalid, Pasuk 4. Vatomer ha'isha hatako is el ha'melech. This woman said to the king, Vatipol al pa'ala peha arza vatishtachu. She fell on her face and she bowed. Vatomer, and she said, Hoshia ha'melech, save me, help me, king. And David says to her, Malach, what's the matter? What's going on? And she says that I am an isha almana ani, vayamas ishi. In Pasuk Hey, in the fifth Pasuk, she says, I am a widow and my husband died. Obviously, we see here a redundancy. Obviously, if she is an almana, if she's a widow, then obviously her husband died. So the Radak explains the redundancy by saying that she is saying, my husband died a while ago, but with this predicament that I am now in, I am reliving my husband's death. And she begins to tell her tale of woe. She has two sons who were fighting in the field, And nobody was there to break up the fight, meaning there were no edim, there were no witnesses. And one son killed the other, and the rest of the family now wants to take my other remaining son and kill him to avenge the death of his brother. She also said, if that happens, there will be no more inheritance for me, and there will be nobody to carry on the line of my dead husband. Obviously, the two brothers are referring to David's two sons, Amnon and Avshalom, where one is killed at the hand of the other. So this woman is trying to generate a judgment from David. And David responds to her and says, go home and we will revisit this in the future, meaning soon, at which point I will let you know my decision. But she doesn't leave and she becomes even more dramatic. She's about to put on an award-winning presentation. She says in Pasuk Tes, 9. Vatomer ha'isha hatekois el hamelach. This woman said to the king, Alai adoni hamelach ha'avon va'al beis avi. On me the sin will be on the house of my father. Ve'hamelach v'chiso naki. But the king and his throne will be innocent. Now, according to Rashi and Radak, she was actually speaking euphemistically. Because really what she meant to say is, really the king will be guilty and I will be innocent. She could not say this directly to the king. The point is that the guilt will actually be on you, David, if you don't do something concrete now, because my son may die in the interim. This tactic works, and David commands his servants to bring the relative who is threatening her son to the palace so that he can warn him directly not to touch her son. But the woman doesn't leave it alone and presses David even further. As we see, she is ad-libbing, which is why she had to be a smart woman. And she says to him, in Pasuk Yud Aleph, she says, Vatomer, Yizkar na hamelech es Hashem Elokecha, meharbas goel hadam l'shaches v'lo yashmid es bini. The king should remember Hashem, your God, to protect me. That God should protect me from the many destructive goel adam, are people that want to take revenge on the person, on the unintentional murderer, so they did not destroy my son. And the Radak explains that David should swear by Hashem that her son will not die at the hands of this goel hadam, of this family member that wants to kill him. To which David responds, Vayomer chai Hashem imipol misa'aras b'nech artza. I swear by Hashem that that there will not be a hair that will fall from your son to the ground. And Rashi explains that this woman is hinting to David that he should remember Hashem, Yizkar. She says, Yizkar na hamelach es Hashem Elokecha. You should remember Hashem, that very Hashem that gave the mitzvah in the Torah, that the roads to an Arei Miklat, a city of refuge that is designated, to the cities of refuge that are designated for unintentional murderers, be clearly marked and have easy access so that he could easily escape any avenging family member. And the reason for this is that even though the Goel Hadam legally can avenge the death of their family member by killing them, still the Torah provides Arei Miklat, cities of refuge, for that unintentional murderer to hide and be safe. But not only that, the Torah demands that the roads be clearly marked as to where this Ir Miklat is. He does not tarry on the way trying to figure out where to go. The purpose of the Arei Miklat in general, and to facilitate an easy escape to the Arei Miklat, is in order to reduce the potential for more bloodshed. And this is what she is hinting to David. Remember that the Torah wants to preserve life of an unintentional murderer. So too, please help spare the life of my son. And if that weren't enough, she presses even further. In Pasuk Yud Beis, Vatomer ha'isha tedaber na shivchascha el Adoni ha'melech davar. Can I please tell you something? Meaning, as if I haven't spoken to you before, but she's pressing on. I need to tell you something else. Vayomer daberi, and he says, speak. She's basically saying, can I be very frank with you? Now, it's interesting that this entire exchange with her drama, with her not taking the cues to leave when initially David dismisses her, with her getting emotional and persistent and actually basically giving the king, David HaMelech, Musar, you know, telling him how to conduct his court and to remind him of certain things, this would have really taxed the patience of many, not to mention a monarch. But we see the patience of David HaMelech right here, who does not have her thrown out, and he keeps saying, yes, I want to hear what you have to say. And from this, we have to keep in mind that David is a king, of the people who would regularly see people and make halachic decisions. David is not just a king. He's not just a warrior. His intensity on the battlefield was an outgrowth of his intensity in Torah matters, his milchamto, the milchamto shel Torah. So this woman then says her final piece and says, why would you think such a thing could occur amongst your people? Meaning, can you imagine that a relative would want to kill the only remaining heir of my family? And she says, please don't turn back on your word that you promised that you would protect my son. And by extension, the king should not turn back on his word to bring back his banished one. Obviously, what she was hinting to is the same way that you have promised that my second son should not be harmed. Mefarshim explained, the Nimshal is, so too, your son Avshalom should be able to come back to Yerushalayim with security that he will not be harmed and that he would be welcomed back. And she presses on. Kimos namus v'chamayim hanigarim arza asher lo ye'aseifu. That's in Pasuk Yudalad 14. Because at the end, we will all die anyway, like spilled water, that's spilled to the ground that we can't gather up. V'lo yisa elokim nefesh. Hashem does not spare anybody. V'chashav machshavos levilti dach mimenu nidach. Let the king ponder thoughts so that no one should be banished from him. What she is saying is that you should try to prevent further bloodshed, just like Hashem tries to prevent further bloodshed through the mitzvah of Ari Miklat. In addition to the fact that an unintentional murderer or somebody that has murdered somebody but there are no edim, a court of law cannot put this person to death, but Hashem ultimately will take care of that person. Ki mos namus, everybody's going to die. And if a person is deserving of death, he will die bidei shamayim. Every person will get their just punishment by God in the end anyway. As it says in Sefer Devarim, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Yedzayin, Ki HaMishpat Leilo Kimhu, the Hashem judges everybody. So now this woman is getting closer to the Nimshol. She is getting closer to the purpose of her presentation to the king. And she says in Pasuk Tesvav 15 that I came to speak to the king about this matter. And Rashi explains, meaning that I had to bring a fabricated story. I couldn't speak to you directly because others frightened me that it would be a terrible, terrible insubordination for me to speak to you directly about your son. And she says, let your own words bring tranquility. That your very words that will spare my son by your verdict tells me that my son should not be killed. Your own words should give you tranquility that your son Avshalom should be spared as well, that he should be able to come back to Yerushalayim safely. As she continues in Pasuk Tazayin 17, Ki kamalach Elokim keinu adoni hamelech l'shmoa hatov hara v'Hashem Elokecha yehi imach, that you are like a malach Elokim to be able to discern tov, good, from bad. And then David finally gets it. And he says to her, please don't hide anything from me. I'm going to ask you a question, but I want you to answer honestly. And this woman says, okay. And Pasuk Yotes 19, Vayomer HaMelech, Hayad Yoav Itach B'kol Zos. Is Yoav's hand in all of this? Did Yoav put you up to this? And the woman admitted that indeed Yoav put her up to this task. So at this point, David concedes and he calls to Yoav and tells Yoav to bring Avshalom back. Yoav is very pleased. He's very satisfied. He bows down to David. Yoav was clearly looking out for the welfare and stability of the kingdom because having a fractured royal family is really not great for the country. So Yoav brings Avshalom back and David orders that while he can return to Yerushalayim, he does not want to see him at all. And this may have been a way to make very clear that David does not condone Avshalom's murderous act of killing Amnon and that vigilantism will not be tolerated in his kingdom. The Navi tells us an aside about Avshalom. Ucha Avshalom lo haya ish yafe b'chol Yisrael lehalel ma'od. And like Avshalom, there was nobody as beautiful, as good-looking, in all of Israel that was as praiseworthy as he was. Mikaf raglo v'ad kad kado lo haya bo mum. From the soles of his feet to the top of his head, there was no blemish. The next pasuk tells us that his hair was very long and that every year he would cut his hair and it would weigh 200 shekels. Now, Chazal extrapolate from here that he was a Nazir. And we actually see reference to this in the next pasuk when Avshalom speaks to David and says that in Geshur he made a neder and he wants to fulfill his neder. And in fact, this neder may have been the fact that he took on Nazirus. But from here, Chazal learn that a Nazir Olam, somebody who promises to be a Nazir for the rest of his life, may cut his hair. One of the restrictions is cutting hair, but he may cut his hair every year when his hair becomes too heavy. So they learn this out from this pasuk, which is interesting because they're learning it out from Avshalom, who rebelled against his father. The Abarbanel actually contends that Avshalom grew his hair not out of Nazirus, but out of sheer vanity. Either way, this parenthetical statement is giving us some insight into Avshalom's rebellion against his father in the next couple prakim, and what was the underlying catalyst for his rebellion. And says the Radak, Samuch l'sipor hamered shemarad ba'aviv siper magaram loze, ki hu yafeh ubechol Yisrael lo yakamoh, v'nisga'e biyofyo ubesa'aro v'chashav ki ein ra'oy l'mluchum ubnei David kamohu. What the Radak is saying is that the catalyst for his rebellion is the fact that he became very haughty because of his beauty, which led to his rebellion. Radak also posits that perhaps Avshalom knew that Shlomo was already chosen to be successor and therefore uses his magnetism later to bring a following after him. So that because he wanted to be the king instead of Shlomo. Now, the Sefer Mishpato Zahav explains, and he brings out an irony here. And that is that if Avshalom took on this Nazirus, the Nazirus is designed to bring more Kedusha, it's designed to bring more elevation, and instead his Nazirus brought him to Gaiva, to a sense of haughtiness, that he was on a pedestal because of his taking on the stringency of Nazirus. It just added to his pompousness. Okay, we are then told that Avshalom had three sons and one daughter. One daughter's name was Tamar, and perhaps this daughter was named after his sister, whose honor he stood up for, which was really the catalyst of all of this, of all of these events. And we are told that Avshalom stayed in Yerushalayim for 2 years, during which time he did not see David, but he sent repeated messages to Yoav to orchestrate an audience with David HaMelech. Yoav ignores him, and Avshalom, in frustration, burns Yoav's field. And when confronted as to why he did such a terrible thing, he burnt his field. Avshalom says to him, "Well, I tried to reach you. You never returned my calls. You never got back to me. So now, do I have your attention now?" He says, "Why did you bring me back from Geshur? And I can't even see my father anyway. What is the point?" So Yoav speaks to David, and David agrees to see him. The last pasuk in our perek, pasuk 33, Lamed Gimel. The last part of that pasuk, Vayishak HaMelech LaAvshalom, the king kissed Avshalom, and the Ralbag points out, it says Vayishak HaMelech LaAvshalom, to Avshalom, implying that it was a kiss that lacked in affection, which only adds to Avshalom's feelings of resentment, sowing more seeds for his imminent rebellion. Thank you for studying together. Le'iloi Nishmas, Malka Esther, Bas Tzvi Yosef.